day of March at 1:30. Thank you, committee, for being here at 1:30. Sorry for the delay. As you know, floor session went longer. I'd like to welcome the PAGE program here to the committee. It's a fun and entertaining committee. It should make your entire day at the Capitol well worth it. Are you laughing because you disagree with me, Representative?
He was taking part in the fun.
It was Mr. Chairman, after today's floor session, it's a fun day.
Thank you, Representative. At this time, we're going to skip out of order because we have some folks or a folk that has traveled some distance. Cletus? There she is. We'll start now.
Okay.
I'm just joking. We already did. Great. We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3302. Call forward Bill Northrup, Lane County, please.
May I join Mr. Northrup since he's my constituent?
Representative Farr, there's nothing more that I would like than for you to join Mr. Northrup at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Cletus, would you please read the bill summary?
Yes, Mr. Chair. HB 3302 directs Secretary of State to print measure arguments in state's voters' pamphlet, and the order arguments are filed and without any title designating whether argument supports or opposes measure.
Thank you, Cletus. Welcome. Please state your name for the records.
My name is Bill Northrup.
My name is Debbie Farr, State Representative for District 14. And for the record, I would like to introduce Bill Northrup, one of my constituents. I filed this bill on his behalf. Since he's the expert and he's done all of the research, I'm going to let him talk to you about it. But I wanted to welcome him to our committee. Thanks, Bill.
Bill, thank you. Please proceed.
Okay. The issue that is brought about in the bill in the last couple elections, there have been people have been putting arguments that are obviously opposed to a measure under the heading in favor of. The Secretary of State has said that they cannot do anything about that because if they were to screen them and redecide what they should go into, they would be violating people's First Amendment thing because interpretation is highly subjective. Okay, so one of the things I propose to keep our voters' pamphlet from being kind of made a mockery, where people are directed to this section to see arguments that are by the Secretary of State, they put the title in favor of, and then they go there and they find these things and they read a little bit, wait, what is this? So what I propose is that we get rid of the titles. They already come in order of received as far as first come, first printed, under pro or con, but I recommend that we just do it all in one lump section. What that does is then you do not have the Secretary of State putting his stamp on it and then people laughing about the fact that look at what you're doing. Now, in the last election, we had Measure 36 and Measure 37, two different measures. Both had the same kinds of things, and I gave you copies of those so that you can see that it's, you know, affects a kind of a different kinds of measures, you know, financial measures, morals measures, different kinds of things. And I just feel that it's going to get worse, and it's going to get worse, and I think that it makes people sad that the Secretary of State and the voters' pamphlet and the people of Oregon can be made fun of. And I think that if we make this change, I think that people will no longer look at argument in favor and expect to see that. I think that they will look at who's writing it and make a decision on the merits. And we'll no longer be misleading. So the main reason that I wanted to present this is I just didn't feel that the people of Oregon should be mocked. I didn't feel that the Secretary of State should be laughed at. And I didn't think that people who are honest, who put their measures where they belong, should be confronted with the situation that people are directed there and then see something that's totally erroneous. So hopefully this is just a minor thing. I did talk with Fred Neal, who's the voter's pamphlet supervisor, and he said that the Secretary of State's office saw nothing wrong with that. They don't advocate any particular measures, but they saw nothing to disagree with about in the measure. I also stopped by his office today just before I came in, and there's one necessary amendment that will need to happen. There was one section, 251.260, that had some language, similar language, that was not included, and it would just need to be changed to match. So that is it.
Bill, thank you so much for your due diligence on this bill. It sounds like you've research and talk with the appropriate people. So thank you for doing that.
All right.
Are there any questions? Representative Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Northrup, now, of course, folks could still put on their paper argument in favor, and there's still that, that issue. So.
Yes. Yes, the big thing is that this. I don't think the Secretary of State should be required to use a banner that they can't do anything about, put the state stamp on it saying in favor when they know they can't police it. If we just leave it, then nobody is misled or directed. It's just read it and make your decision on what it is. So the same content will be in there, yes, just without that stamp that makes us look kind of silly.
Follow up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's in other words, I could still write argument in favor culture war at the top of my thing if I wanted to be facetious.
Or yes. Yeah.
Assuming this is a facetious argument,
yes.
And there's always that question. I mean, I don't know
exactly.
I don't know the people one way or the other. So
exactly.
So you wouldn't try to say they couldn't put argument in favor or against.
Not at all. Just that when everybody and all the newspapers write about it, you know, and everybody's laughing about this thing, everybody knows, and the person who wrote it says, of course, it was an opposition argument that was written in satire, but yet we're forced to put this banner on it, and then people who may be paying attention may not be go there to read these arguments we say are for, and it's misleading that we would put them there. So if that's removed, when there's no mockery, no laughing stock, and people just, you know, reader beware, which is, you know, what it should be. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Northrup, is your intent to encourage the voters when they're reading arguments, either in opposition to or in favor of, to read all of the arguments as they go through the voter's pamphlet? In other words, if I'm in favor of a measure and I just want to go and be affirmed and read all of the other arguments in favor, this way I'm going to just read each argument because they're going to be printed in the order they were received.
Yeah.
And I have no idea whether they're in favor of or in opposition to.
That's true. It would have an effect in that people would likely read more of them. I know personally, if I'm reading them, you know, before, right now as it stands, when I go to the four section, I just start reading these things and I'm going, whoa, what's this? And I go to the next one expecting to see four. Well, what's this? And the next one, four, and what's this? And I'm going to change the way I read the voter's pamphlet. If this passes, and even if it doesn't, but I hope that it does, if this passes, when I read measures, I'm going to start looking at the bottom to see who these people are first, not to the Secretary of State's stamp in favor of or in opposition to.
Follow up?
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair. So do you believe that this would encourage voters to be more informed?
I do. I think so. And not only that, but as the law reads right now, the Secretary of State has to make a determination if he thinks that the measure was submitted maybe perhaps under the wrong number, or if he thinks that it was submitted under the wrong category, then he has to try to contact the person. If we remove the categories, the only thing he has to contact them for is, I think you got it in the wrong number. And so it actually would alleviate a little bit of busy work for the Secretary of State's office as well.
Are there any other questions? Great. Well, we'll look forward to you bringing back the amendments that that you spoke of and taking another look at this bill. So at this time, we'll close the public hearing.
Thank you.
House Bill 3302, and thanks for being here today. I think I saw Representative Nelson. I know I did. That means we have to skip around to, or skip back to the top to open a public hearing on HCR 13. Staff, will you please read the bill summary?
Mr. Chair, HCR 13 commemorates the 125th anniversary of Dayton, Oregon.
Representative Nelson, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Kidd. Chair Kidd and distinguished members of this committee, thank you very much for hearing House Concurrent Resolution 13 today. I am so fortunate. Oh, I should tell you that I'm State Representative Donna Nelson from District 24, Yamhill County, beautiful Willamette Valley. Anyway, back to where I was, I'm so fortunate to live in a county that has numerous small little cities, just like the one I grew up in Texas. And today I'm here before you because I would like you to assist me in drafting this resolution so that we can commemorate the 125th anniversary of Dayton, Oregon. The city of Dayton was incorporated in 1880 in Oregon's northwestern Willamette Valley, and it is a very special place. Today I have with me an individual who knows more about this community than anybody else, and I'd like to ask permission to invite Joe Windisch up to testify.
If Joe Windisch is here and would like to come up and testify, we would love to have her.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record, even though I already did myself.
I will make this brief because I left my husband in the car.
That's a good place for him.
I think so.
That may be a reason not to make it.
Well, let's just go shopping.
Yeah. My name is Georgia Jo Windisch. I was mayor in Dayton for 12 years, and just recently we have a new mayor, Jackie Bronze, who couldn't make it today to promote this. And since I'm the chairman of the celebration committee there in Dayton, she figured I could speak to the subject pretty good. I'm very passionate about Dayton because I moved there because it had a park with a gazebo and a cannon and a fountain. And I figured any city that has that deserves to have me as one of their residents. Actually, Dayton has been around for a lot longer than 1880. About 1846, it was mentioned as an entity, but not an official entity at that time. One of our famous people living here stated she was born right outside of Dayton. So it was recognized as a place. Anyway, we have planned many activities this year to honor Dayton. It's one of those little towns that could. They just plug along. We recently successfully completed a 10-year project getting a water system put in and water sources for us that will hold us for a few more years. And so that's my bragging right to my tenure in office. The place has grown. In the 15 years that I've been there, has grown by about 1,200 people, and now that the water system is in, it's going to continue to grow. We have a magician city administrator who keeps us in the black, and despite all of the challenges financially that small cities face, we continue to be able to roll along, doing without some of the little things, but being able to accomplish the things that matter. And one of the things that matters to Dayton is its population. We have over 26% of our population is Hispanic. We have a great many senior citizens who live there. We're kind of a bedroom community. We're sandwiched like bologna in between Newburgh and McMinnville, which is fine with us. So we want to celebrate the fact that we are here and we're still surviving and we're still thriving. We would deem it an honor to be recognized by the state. And we're currently working on a project to locate all of the living ex-mayors from Dayton, and we're doing pretty good with that. And I would think it would be a great thing for them if they could be invited to the state capitol to show that their part of the growth of Dayton has meaning. I tend to cry.
You're just about to do so. Well, she's done so very much for our community.
Please don't cry. I don't do well. With
I know it makes you uncomfortable. But
can you think of a better shoulder to cry on?
Come on. Okay.
Well, would you
that's pandering.
Mind to, to explain what the date is in October?
Well, officially the date is the 15th of October. We have planned monthly activities for the whole year We just completed our first two and are heading into the third one. And our finale is on the 15th. We've recreated the Dayton Brass Band from years ago. We've got a community chorus and a big program for the night of the 15th of October. I was kind of thrown a curve when I got here. She said, well, what date do you want? And I said, what do you mean, what date? I thought you were inviting us. So we're open to actually do anything. We'll just work around whatever is to your convenience. We, of course, would like to do things while you're in session so that we could have participation.
We'll probably still be here October 15th, the way we're going.
I hope not.
No, we'll make it. We'll make it happen before we sign each eye for sure. And it'll be our honor to do this. Also, I just got to put a plug in for the old time fiddlers and in this community. You've never heard anybody fiddle like these old-time fiddlers. They're awesome. So
they're scheduled to be with us at one of our...
We'll really celebrate. In fact, we'll bring them here to the Capitol if you'll pass this resolution.
We would love to have them at the Capitol.
Right. That would be so cool.
Wouldn't that be cool?
So I have to pass the resolution to get the old-time fiddlers.
Oh, please.
Yes.
Representative Nelson, is it your desire that I pass this out today?
Absolutely. If you could, please. It's very critical to the planning for this great community. And I would like to point out to Joe that sitting right in front of you, the Vice Chair, Representative Thatcher, right here, is the representative now for Newburgh. So you're here again. You're packed between us like baloney.
Right. I'll leave it at that. At this time, I will close the public hearing on CR 13. I will open a work session on HCR 13. I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move HCR 13 to the floor with a new pass recommendation.
Representative March moves HCR 13. I'm sorry? Moves HCR 13 be adopted and moved to the floor with a new pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Clark, will you please call the roll?
Representative
Gaffney.
Aye.
Aye. Excused.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
No, just kidding.
Party pooper.
Bill passes. Congratulations. Representative Nelson, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
I would be honored to carry it. Thank you, and thank you all so much.
Representative Nelson will carry the bill on the floor. Thank you for coming. Now you may cry.
No, that's not the time. Persuade.
Tears are to persuade. Committee, make a note of that. Thank you guys for tears are to persuade. I need to get a tape of that one. At this time, as Representative Boquist is here, we will open a public hearing on excuse me, House Bill 3043. Is that the first one you want to hear? That's what we'll do. Call for Representative Brian Boquist, House District 23.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. And distinguished members of the committee, I appeared before you once before, and in fact, Representative March and I have talked on several bills related to this committee at various times. I came before you and talked about 3043, which allows the chief petitioners to be replaced if someone dies in the event of that. I know you're going to hear other testimony today, and since I was the chief sponsors on this bill, I would simply ask that you due consideration be given to this so that the will of the people, once an initial petition is started, if one of those individuals dies, that someone else can carry on the work of that. With your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I also note that you have another one of my bills that I was a co-sponsor on that I could just briefly comment on, if you would.
Let's stick to the germaneness of this. Say what you have to say about this, and then when you're done with that, I will open a simultaneous public hearing on your other bill.
Mr. Chair, since I have spoken to most members on this issue before already, I'm at my finish.
Representative Boquist, we have before us dash one amendments for 3043. Have you taken a look at those, and are you okay with those?
Affirmative. I've looked at those, I think, believe in your office, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, Representative. What is the other bill that you wish while you're here?
The other bill that I'm a co-sponsor on is 3372.
At this time, I open a public hearing as well on House Bill 3372. Please.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, distinguished members of the committee. 3372 is actually not brought forward by me. I'm a co-sponsor. I think Representative Wisnett brought that forth. And I agreed to sign on to that bill for a specific reason. While I was deployed to Iraq, we went through the November election, would have been 2 years ago. And routinely, I had to make the decision as the deputy commander what to do with mail that arrived, specifically ballots, generally speaking, after the election, and that was due to a failure of the military mail system. So when Representative Wisnett raised the idea of this is a possible solution to ensuring that the ballots are delivered to the military members serving our country and that they're returned on time, I co-sponsored this. I do realize that the Association of County Clerks have concern with it, and those concerns will be raised directly with the sponsor, which is Representative Wisnett, but I am amenable to any solution the committee sees fit to ensure the members serving overseas in our military have an opportunity to participate in the balloting and election process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Boquist. Are there any questions for the good representative on either of the two public works that are public hearings that are open currently? Seeing none, I will close a public hearing on House Bill. No one else has signed up for 3043. Is that correct, Letus?
No.
I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3043 at this time. I will open a work session on House Bill 3043 at this time. That's you. Maybe the next one is.
Mr. Chair,
I
move we adopt the amendment to House Bill 3043, the dash one amendment.
Representative Holby moves the dash one amendment into House Bill 3043. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, so done. Representative Holby.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee pass House Bill 3043 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended?
As amended.
Representative Holvey moves House Bill 3043 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Annetta, will you please call the roll?
Aye.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. Bill passes. Thank you. Representative, do you wish to carry that?
Mr. Chair, I'd be delighted to.
Representative Boquist will carry House Bill 3043 as amended on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, distinguished members.
Thank you. There is still a public hearing open on House Bill 3372. Is there anyone wishing to testify on House Bill 3372? Committee will stand at ease. It's right here. House Bill 3372, I see Representative Wisnett signed up. I don't see him in attendance, so I will skip him for the time being. Representative Krupp, I see you here. Are you here for
House Bill 3342.
Thank you. We're on House Bill 3372 currently. At this time, I will call forward Annette Newingham. Annette, I see here that you're opposed to yet another one of my bills.
No, just take it in front of you. Okay.
Well, welcome, committee.
I think I saw you not too long ago.
It's getting to be a habit.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
It's Annette Newingham from Lane County Elections, and I'm here on behalf of the Association of County Clerks, Chair Kitts, members of the committee. This testimony is to just point out a few concerns that we have with this bill. Section 1, page 1, on line 7, the bill changes the date to deliver absentee ballots to the 50th day before the election, 5 days earlier than what we currently have, which is the 45th day. There are several issues in moving this date earlier. One, currently, there's three statutes that provide the cities, the county, and districts the ability, if it's on the September ballot, they have a measure on the ballot, that they can resubmit if it fails over to the November election, and they have a deadline of the 47th day prior to the election. So there's a little bit of a conflict. If we had the 50th day, we would be preparing ballots prior to possibly another measure being submitted. So we'd either have to repeal those laws, or we would have to resubmit a ballot, a second ballot, to those individuals that we had already sent a ballot to. The next portion, the time provided between the filing deadline, which is the 61st day before the election, to the date we mail our long-term absent voters on the 45th, that period of time we use to typeset, layout, proof, and print ballots. And to give you an example, this last election in Lane County, we had 256 different ballot styles that we had to prepare, and that's over 220,000 ballots to be printed. So it does take time to do that kind of typesetting and proofing. What we'd probably have to do, since the ballots might not be ready by the 50th day, is we'd have to just put the contest without the names of the candidates and just put in write-in lines to give them an opportunity to vote on those contests, and we would have to duplicate them when they came back. On lines 22 through 27, it would talk about the military return identification envelope, because this particular envelope has to be designed at the direction of the Federal Voting Assistance Program, and they work with the Secretary of State, so there'd have to be some coordination between those two agencies in order to get the approval for the changes that are suggested in this bill. And then we would have to have two different types of envelopes, one for the military and one for the rest of the out-of-country, because the language would be different. Obviously, you wouldn't have a commanding officer for people that live in just Europe, for instance, that are away for a time. Section 2, page 2, on the lines dealing with lines 22 through 23, the military return envelopes are currently prepaid postage, and I thought I should clarify that issue, that we already, when they mail them back, they do not have to pay the postage on those. Lines 28 through 35, there's just some kind of questions that really were of some concern. How would an election official know whether it actually was a commanding officer's signature? Are commanding officers always present at the locations where military personnel are present, including in the fields? What if a commanding officer didn't like the way a particular viewpoint of an individual? Could they somehow not sign it so that the person couldn't sign, return their ballot? What would be the status of military dependents? That's not real clear. We do treat them currently the same. If they are a military dependent, we would send them the same way we would with our military. How do election officials know whether an individual qualifies as military personnel opposed to those ballots received too late? The election officials would have to have a really clear guideline of knowing whether it's a military. How would we be notified when they were discharged from the military so that we could tell the difference of those? Section 3, lines 2 through 5, if military ballots could be received 7 days following the election and there were signature issues, there would not be sufficient time to provide the current 10 days for a voter to resolve those issues unless we extended the date to certify elections. So currently we give voters, if we reject their signatures, 10 days to be able to resolve that with us if there was a reason that signature had changed, and they have 10 days to do so, but we already would be changing that to 7 days. So we are suggesting it would probably need to be about the 27th day after the election for certification to allow the same amount of time to complete the audit. The same concerns as listed above would apply as to the commanding officer and the signature issues, and the ability of an election official to accurately ascertain the validity of such a signature. Could be his buddy who signed it. I'll be your commanding officer for the day. We wouldn't have any way of knowing. This exception to ballots received for a select group of voters adds new deadlines and risks of errors. Our association is sensitive to the needs of our military and to have the adequate time to participate in Oregon elections. I can tell you that my son just returned from Iraq and from National Guard, and he was there for a year. So I'm more than sensitive to that issue. We definitely need to be sure that they get their ballots on time so that they can return it. And I would really like to suggest on behalf of the association that there are means that we could implement to help them out, like adding language in the statutes that we could email a ballot to them. They still have to mail it back in an enclosed envelope, but currently there's no statutory authority to do that. Oftentimes, we will really try to do heroics for the military to help them out because we think that's very important. So we urge your careful consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Annette. If you could... for Representative Wisner, whose bill this is, if you could email him questions that you've raised, especially regarding lines 28 through 35, and let him address those questions.
Yes.
I won't move this bill today until we get some further clarification, because I think you raised some very valid questions. But we've called Representative Wisner's office. He's not in. We've got voicemail. He may be in committee right now. But I'd like him to have an opportunity to address the questions specifically. So if you could do that, that'd be great.
Yeah, Chair Kitts and members of the committee, I'd be more than happy to do so. I did try to get hold of Representative Boquist yesterday a couple of times to try to address some of these issues, and we just crossed each other. He did try to get hold of me, and we just weren't able to connect.
He's a wily one. Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe to broaden that question, to go back to what could we change in the law to achieve this purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So if you worked with the authors and creatively came up with a better solution, with, you know, if there's just some language tweaks that give you more authority or flexibility, that would be appreciated.
Thank you, Representative. I'm assuming that you are Steve Druckenmiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your assumption's correct. And in the interest of time, I think I'll say ditto like you asked at another hearing from someone else. The only thing I would like to point out here, and that's, we're really talking about two issues within this bill. One is the ballots going out. And I think we could make about any changes that the legislature would want to accomplish that. The bigger issue to me is the integrity of elections, and that involves the ballots coming back and postmarks. And I would strongly and respectfully disagree with anyone who ever tried to make Oregon a postmark state in the case of ballots. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you being here. See no questions? I'm sorry. I see questions now.
Maybe half a question here.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. You brought up the the idea of an emailing the ballot, and mm-hmm. I find that intriguing. And why wouldn't you maybe propose emailing everybody's ballot?
Oh, yeah. Chair Kitts, Representative Thatcher, probably wouldn't have the time to be able to do it. It's actually pretty time-consuming, but certainly for circumstances like this, it really merits the extra work. What we would do is have a copy of the ballot. You scan it in a scanner, and you have a PDF, and then you make a copy of their envelope. There's some work on their part that they have to do, where they have to actually email that PDF. They copy it. They have to cut out the part that would go on the top of their envelope, paste it on so that they have the right oath, and then they return it back. So there's a little bit of creativeness, and it does take a little bit more work, but I think under a limited circumstance, it would be workable.
Thank you. I find it intriguing.
Okay.
Thank you very much, and thank you again for being here today. Appreciate it. At this time, we'll call forward Jesse Cornett and Brenda Weiss. Representative Krupp, in the interest of time, these will be the last people that will be testifying on this. We'll go to the next bill.
Chair Pitts, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jesse Cornett. I'm the legislative liaison for the Secretary of State's office, joined with Brenda Bays from our Elections Division. House Bill 3372 is clearly well-intentioned, but our office thinks it actually makes it more difficult for military voters to participate in the process and generally sets a bad precedent. By moving the date for military ballots closer to the filing date, military voters in some cases may receive ballots that are blank, printed without names, forcing the voters to essentially write in candidates for races. The way it's written, we just don't think there's going to be enough time. There's simply not enough time to print ballots with every candidate listed. Extending the time for military ballots to be returned beyond the election day is a similar step in the wrong direction. As you all know, Oregon's not a postmark state. Every ballot has to be on election day, which is why they're sent out to overseas voters 45 days in advance. Creating this new classification for military voters is really asking for the sort of trouble we've seen in previous elections in other states, Florida in 2000, Washington in 2004. The great thing about our deadline is, I mean, we never have that discussion of postmarks. So we believe very strongly the way to enfranchise all overseas voters is through technology, as the clerk said. We can work on emailing ballots, faxing, any number of other ways that we can see using technology to improve military voters' accessibility to the process. And we've also talked today to the sponsor of this bill and look forward to working with them, hopefully, to come up with some better solutions. And that's all the testimony I have prepared, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Jesse, I would have two questions. First of all, if this body were to require from 45 to 50 days, you could also require to be printed in their form that they're going to be sent out to everybody within that time frame. Now, it may incur more of a fiscal because obviously you'd have staffing issues and time constraints, but it is possible. So would you agree with that or disagree with that?
Sending the ballots 5 days earlier would be difficult. Brenda, if you can speak to the feasibility of that.
For the record, my name is Brenda Bays. I'm the operations manager with the Secretary of State Elections Division. Chair Kitts, I believed, as Annette Newingham from Lane County had mentioned in her testimony, there could be issues of not knowing which measure for a local measure would be on the ballot. So if they printed the ballot, they would be possibly leaving some measures off of that ballot.
Okay. Thank you. The second thing is, and we've gone over this, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but currently in Oregon, people vote after the deadline anyway, after the 8 o'clock, whether we're a postmark state or not. Hence, if one is in line after 8 o'clock, they are still given the opportunity to vote, even if that line is 14 miles long and it takes until midnight to gather those ballots of those that are in line. Technically, they would not have voted by 8 o'clock, and technically, they would have voted the next day. Is that accurate?
Technically, I think that's the only exception, where if a person is actually there in line, the length of the line is clearly outside of their control. They were there to fill out their ballots. Accolades to any county elections office that can get through a 14-mile line in 4 hours also.
I would concur that. The size of that line is very big and probably a little exaggerated. However, I do think that we've seen cases where well after 8 o'clock ballots were being collected.
Mm-hmm.
Would the Secretary of State's office support cutting off the deadline at 8 o'clock? Hence, if it's not in the possession of the county clerk's office at 8 o'clock, that the doors are shut?
I would have to check with the office. I think we have been opposed to that in the past and don't know why we would feel any different now. I mean, our offices have been and remain large advocates of doing, anything that's reasonably possible to enfranchise voters, letting people who showed up by the time we told them they had to show up by actually vote is reasonable, I think.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Representative Thatcher.
I have a question. Just a half a question. I don't think it's too much, but you talked a little bit about moving the problem with moving up the mailing date of the ballots 5 days because of conflicts with the filing date. Would it be difficult to move the filing date up 5 more days as well, just to bring that into give you the same length of time?
Chair Kitz, Representative Thatcher, I think that that's something that that if this bill passed would have to occur. Yes.
Great. Thanks, guys, for being here. I'll write it in March.
Yeah.
In
thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if you're the right people to ask this, but when we were looking at some bills in 2001 session regarding possibly going to the postmark thing, I saw a lot of indications of no postmark on some envelopes, particularly APOs. You know, the military ones are rarely rarely postmarked. So, is that still the case that the postmarks don't seem to be there, so you wouldn't know whether it was sent on time or not?
Chair Kitz, Representative March, we could probably get back to you with better information on that. I don't think that because we're not a postmark state that we focused a lot of attention on that particular issue.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jesse, I was curious if you have any notion or any data that suggests that we have a problem getting ballots that are mailed out of state. Is that problem more of a problem for the military ballots, or as opposed to just somebody who's out of state?
Chair Kitz, Representative Holy, I think the sponsors of this bill would assert that that's the case. Our office doesn't have any information that would verify that. 45 days is a typically reasonable length of time to get a ballot out, even if it's to a soldier, get it filled out and returned.
Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, I just want to note that we actually are kind of a postmark state when it comes to voter registration, are we not?
Chair Kitz, Representative Thatcher, we do accept postmarks on voter registration cards, that's right.
And
follow up?
And what I hear is that this bill would be doable if you just moved up the deadlines that occur before the mailing of the ballots. It would be doable.
I think that Chair Kitz, Representative Thatcher, moving the date back 5 days, if other deadlines were changed, the county clerks could probably speak better to me, and we may want to call Annette up to discuss how the time frames, you know what, I mean, if you push deadline X back, you know what, I mean, the chain effect that could have. So I think consulting with her would be best. I don't think it would be impossible. The Secretary of State's kind of the larger concern we have is the postmark issue and receiving the ballots a week after, up to a week after the election. That's a larger concern.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you. Representative Wisnant, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My pleasure. I'm disappointed that our committee's not in Bend, Oregon again.
Fine.
So were we.
It was wonderful to be in Bend. Thank you for having us.
And Mr. Chair and honorable committee members.
How come it's not honorable chair and committee members?
Calls them like he sees them.
Thank you for your testimony today.
Honorable chair. Kids. And honorable committee members. I learned after appearing in Bend, however, that my testimony today, that I have checked with my county clerk about my bill and about any additional cost. It's a pleasure and an honor to testify in front of you, and I come before you testifying in support of a bill that I have a deep affection for. After serving 27 and a half years in the military, I have filed absentee ballots. And I know a little bit about the system. I was actually a voting officer. Oh, I got testimony here. Help me out here, Susanna.
There's all sorts of
And also, as I think I testified in front of this committee in Bend, thank you, Representative, that I was a Republican Party chair and was involved in watching ballots and being sure they're done correctly. And we're real honored in Deschutes County that we've got a good system and we have very few problems. However, based upon my military experience, I think it's important that we support and pass this bill. The opportunity to participate in our elections is a fundamental core of our government. It's imperative that we do all we can to ensure that long-term absent electors, especially those serving in the armed forces of the United States, have this opportunity extended to them. My bill required that ballots to be delivered to those voters 5 days earlier than the current required, as well as allow the ballots returned to the voters be counted if they are received by the county clerk no later than 7 days after the date of the election, and provide they are signed by the voter, the elector, and the commanding officer prior to the day of the election. I realize that there are many concerns from county clerks as far as the, how this will work, the extension, but as I said, I talked to my county clerk, right now, They print them 45 days, as you know, ahead of time. But I do understand the importance of making sure that all of our out-of-state voters have a chance to let their voices be heard in our democratic process. Our armed forces need this extended opportunity to allow their voice to be counted in our elections while they're proudly serving our country abroad. As you well know, members of this committee, that there is a procedure for counting ballots after the election date. And military members in our state, we have not had many military members serving overseas as we have in the last couple of years. But I think this bill takes a step to be ensure that they have the right to vote and that their votes are counted. There's situations where you're not able to get back. If you're out in combat, if you're in submarines, there are situations that do occur, and I think we want to be sure that our military members have the opportunity to vote and that their votes are counted. That is all the prepared testimony I have, Honorable Chair, and I'll be glad to take questions.
Thank you, Honorable Representative. Appreciate you being here, and likewise appreciate your 27 and a half years of military service to this country. So, Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wisdom, I appreciate your perspective. You bring a unique perspective to this issue. If there was another way of doing it rather than by mail, you mentioned, for example, someone out on the ocean in a submarine, if we could send that ballot by email to the submarine when they surface to collect it, to collect the data, would that maybe even speed up the process more? I mean, is there another way around the tree? So the issue here is getting folks to vote, the opportunity to vote.
Honorable Chair Kitts and Honorable Chair Representative Marsh. I missed some of the early testimony from Secretary of State's representatives, and they did have the courtesy come in and talk to me, and also my county clerk talked to me about the fact that the Secretary of State's office is looking at emails. And yes, I actually wrote the Secretary of State before the last election and proposed that we use emails for our members in the military, as the state of Missouri did in the last election.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are two different issues in this bill. One's getting it to them, and I think the email thing or option does sound intriguing. But you still have the issue of getting them back. And I would also like to state that the post office is also clear. The postal system of the world is out of the control of the voter, and allowing it to be received 7 days after would make that more fair. But it's, the bill also addresses the fact that they would need a commanding officer signature verifying that they have voted. They did bring the county clerks did bring up an interesting Sarah, how would they know that would actually be the commanding officer's signature? Are there ways that we could build into this to verify their signatures? I mean, they exist. Sure, it would find a way to do that.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Representative Thatcher. I think it could be worked out. Usually in the military, you sign and you put your Social Security number, which is actually your military ID number, too, and that could be used to verify that he is the officer in charge. Or that you could, I think that could be verified easily enough.
Follow up?
Would this be, how would they seek this out? I mean, they get a ballot back signed by a commanding officer that's based in California or, you know, elsewhere. How would they track that down? Would you suggest they send an affidavit with the pile of, you know, how would that work? Proving.
Honorable Chair Kitts and Honorable Representative Thatcher. I think it could be worked out. I think if you're coming from an Oregon National Guard or unit, I think someone here could verify that that is the unit commander. I think it's a good question, but I think it can be verified. And I'd be, you know, willing to work or review or the Secretary of State's office to look into this and see what we can come up with.
I think I have the answer to that, since all you need to register to vote is a piece of mail, official mail, that is sent to you at your address. Maybe they could just provide an envelope that has their name and address on it, and that would be proof.
Honorable Chair Kitts and Honorable Chair Representative Barr, you just wanted me to call you Honorable. That's a good idea, and I think we could look into that.
Thank you, Representative. Seeing no further questions, realizing there are some concerns, and you weren't here earlier to hear the testimony of the county clerks, Annette is willing to email you some of the questions and concerns and allow you to address them, and at that time I will consider that if there's some compromise or work group that needs to be appointed at that time, we'll go forward at that time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, the 7 days, I think that's critical, because I had a quick check with my county clerk. There was at least two ballots received after the deadline for military stationed overseas, two military received from stateside units after it. And we do have the procedure to ballots challenged and signatures challenged, that there is a period after the election that we count extra ballots. So I would like to be sure that any work groups do look at that, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you, Representative. Thank you. Appreciate it. Seeing no one else to testify on House Bill 3372, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 33.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ruth. I've got your note right here. I covered it up. Unintentional, I assure you.
We'll reopen the...
Did I close it?
We'll reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3372.
Okay, Ruth Bendel, 10980 Southwest Millwood Drive. As an observer at Washington County elections, I would like to reaffirm the fact that anybody who has a mismatched signature is given an additional 10 days in which to return the ballot with a new voter registration and have that ballot counted. So if that is allowance is made for people where there is a mismatched question about a mismatched signature, that kind of 10-day extension cannot be allowed to those who are serving their country, I think would be an outrage, and I wholeheartedly hope that this bill is passed with that provision. Never mind 7 days, let's make it the same equal protection for our military as for those who've had a signature that's for some reason been mismatched. That's all I have to say. Please do pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth, and that's a good point. We'll have Cletus look into that, so appreciate you bringing that up. At this time, we will again close the public hearing on House Bill 3372. At this time, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3342. Calling forward Representative Krupp.
Mr. Chair, if it would please the committee, I'd like to invite Wayne Brady and Don McIntyre to join me.
Representative Krupp, there is nothing that this committee would be more pleased with than to hear from Mr. Brady and Mr. McIntyre. Especially Mr. McIntyre.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's great to be before you. My first opportunity this session, hopefully will not be my last. I have a great opportunity to bring to you House Bill 3342 at the request of the Oregon Taxpayers Association and Wayne Brady. And that's why these two fine gentlemen are here with me today. As you know, in my opinion, and I think most of us hold the same view, that nothing is more important than the integrity of this precious right we have to vote. In Oregon, we don't know if people who are registered to vote are really who they say they are. I think that's a mistake, and I think we ought to change that. This bill dovetails very nicely with some other legislation that is moving its way through the legislature, having to do with ID theft and the security of driver's licenses. I have another bill that was heard yesterday in transportation in regards to the verification online of Social Security numbers used for DMV registration and to obtain an Oregon driver's license. There are 41 states who do that today. Oregon is one of nine who do not. And we're proposing that they're able to achieve that. This bill, 3342, basically says that a person who registers to vote in this state will have to produce identification, because today you are not required to produce identification when you register to vote. And if you're going to be doing that under the Motor Voter Act at DMV, we ought to be using the driver's license, because hopefully with the other instruments, legislative concepts that are winding their way through the legislation, that in fact we will have a far more secure driver's license system in this state that will again follow the intent of what Congress is proposing and likely will become law very shortly, that we can provide using a driver's license that is secure, that is verified, that the people whose pictures are on driver's license are in fact the people that they say they are, and that we can use that documentation as positive identification that the people who register to vote are who they say that they are. So I think that this vote, or this bill, will produce, I think, a voter system that ultimately will be as well identified and as with the highest of integrity as that you could ever produce. And that is why I think this is incredibly important that we move forward with this legislation. In light of the issues that are occurring to our neighbor to the north, I think there are certainly many questions about Washington State's laws and the veracity and integrity of their voting system. And when it comes to people being registered, I think it is clear that the law states you must have residency. You must be who you say you are. You must be a citizen of the United States of America. That is a precious right. We are not ensuring it today under the law. We need to ensure it. And that is why we brought this bill forward to you today. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn over the remainder of the presentation to Wayne Brady and then Don McIntyre.
Thank you, Representative. Wayne, please go ahead.
Chairman Kitts and members of the committee, my name is Wayne Brady. My address is 3794 East Nenich Circle South in Salem. I request this bill on behalf of the Taxpayer Association of Oregon, and Representative Krupp has agreed to sponsor the bill. As Representative Krupp said, the idea is to make sure that the people who are registered to vote are really who we think they are. You should have a slightly modified amendment in front of you. We'll submit that and get a formal amendment to reflect what's on that sheet. Also want to invite suggestions from the committee on things that they think might be done to enhance the bill. We think this is certainly a step in the right direction, and we'd like to, if there are any additional features that might make it even better, we'd certainly welcome that. The other bill that Representative Krupp mentioned that would require Social Security numbers for the acquisition of a driver's license or a state ID card is House Bill 2947, if you'd care to look at that and see what the requirements are. I thank you for hearing me and would be willing to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Thank you for being here. Mr. McIntyre, they say the best for last.
Thank you for the compliment, Honorable Chair of this committee, and to honorable members of the committee. I'm Don McIntyre. I am the nominal president of the Taxpayer Association of Oregon, and as you see on the bill, we have an interest in it, as all Oregonians do who think about the integrity of their voting process. Any right-thinking citizen would want a voting system to be Simon Pure. Right now, we see a number of pitfalls in the system that leave the system vulnerable somewhat to issues of potential fraud. One of the things that occurred to me, and this is what I wanted to say at North Plains, and it fits this bill. And the reason I can say that it fits this bill is that there is a paragraph in this bill before you that is exactly the same as the bill that was in North Plains, where we were asking for approval of that. The paragraph is exactly the same word count, except one word difference. Where in House Bill 3342 before you now, it says a person registering to vote in a state for the first time must supply evidence of identification. All the rest of the words are the same. In 2583, the bill at North Plains says exactly the same thing, except it says the voter must supply evidence of citizenship. Now, I think that's a distinction with the difference. And the reason I think that the language in this bill is a little bit redundant, where you have evidence of identification. Identification is evidence, or evidence is identification. It's almost the same word. But the reason I think the word citizenship should be in there is simply constitutional. Our Constitution says that here's what a voter is. It is every citizen of the United States who is entitled to vote in elections, and in Oregon, you must have lived here for 6 months, and you must be 18 years old. Now, that's the constitutional requirement. Our elections officials apparently do not want to adhere to the Constitution, and when we have said, why don't you check people's citizenship, they said, well, it's not in statute. Well, then it's up to the legislature to put it in statute, and I think this is an opportunity to do it, because y'all did, when you came down here, you swore to uphold the Constitution. Now, one of the things that the Constitution also says is that under regulation of elections, it says the Legislative Assembly shall enact laws to support the privilege of free suffrage, prescribing the manner of regulating and conducting elections, and so on, and then it says to stop bribery, tumult, and other improper conduct. So establishing citizenship as a means of certifying whether or not someone's qualified to vote helps get rid of improper conduct. Again, elections officials aren't following that, so we ask you to put it in statute. So elections officials, who apparently aren't capable of reading the Constitution, will read your statute and adhere to the principle. Finally, I'll say, when I was at North Plains, I listened to the elections officials and others, and the only reason that I heard from the testimony that people didn't want to have to show or prove that they were citizens, i.e. a birth certificate, a passport, naturalization papers, was it because it was inconvenient? And I think that that is a petty, paltry, insufficient argument. Remember that if it is a little bit of trouble to go get your birth certificate or whatever it is, it's trouble one measly time in anticipation of a lifetime of exercising that fabulous franchise that is voting in a free society. So I do hope that this committee will add the term U.S. citizen, proof of citizenship, to the language of this measure. I think the citizens who are legitimate citizens of Oregon would appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Are there amendments being drafted, Representative, that would, or is this just simply the request of Mr. McIntyre at this time?
Mr. Chair, by the way, I forgot to state for the record who I am, Jeff Krupp, House District 17.
Thank you.
You have the dash ones in front of you. The change that Mr. McIntyre just suggested is certainly amenable with me, and I believe Mr. Brady. We would be happy to have that drafted. Or if it would meet the committee's pleasure, you could make a conceptual amendment in a word change now.
LC has frowned upon the conceptual amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, they have.
As you know, just because of the translation between here and there. So if amendments were to be made, I would just ask that they be drafted and brought forward to the committee at that time. Just keep everything neat and tidy. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. We will
you.
Do so.
Thank you guys for being here today.
Thank you.
At this time, I will call forward Ruth Bendel and Sharon Cornish.
My name is Ruth Bendel, 10980 Southwest Millwood Drive. I do have written testimony for you. I'd like to make one correction with regard to whether or not citizenship, the requirement of citizenship or definition of citizenship is in or out of statute, and I'd like to quote the statute that actually specifies what an elector means, and it is that the person, and it refers then to the Oregon Constitution as what the citizen is, and that's in Article 2, stating that an elector must be a citizen, 18 years of age, and a resident of the state. So the statute is not missing. The statute is already there. But the problem is that no one wants to enforce the statute, and we go round and round in whether somebody brings a driver's license or a utility bill or something of that nature as proof of who they are. I'm further concerned that we adopt something of this nature now because of the centralized voter registration system. I did sit through a presentation by people from the elections, the state elections division, about the centralized voter registration system, and I want to tell you how deeply disturbed I was from what I learned, and that is that while that system is going to to be funded by $18 million from the federal government in order to clean up our registration system, it appears to be the intent of our Secretary of State to simply gather up everything that is currently on the election rolls, whether it's valid, whether it's really electors, whether it's animal, vegetable, or mineral, because we don't have any identifying data, right? Everything to be just merged into the system, a system that's set up for actually tracking data, like the social security number, like the driver's license. So here we're going to, according to the Secretary of State, put in 2 million people from the electoral rolls who've not supplied any of the needed, HAVA needed data, and then just
impose requirements on the people who come along afterwards, namely social security number and the driver's license. I would like to say, and I've already testified before Ways and Means to that effect, I think that we are all going into a new system, and therefore we should all be required to re-register and provide the data that that new system requires, and not give Secretary of State Bill Bradbury a legacy, which is what he described he was looking at the money from the federal government as, a legacy of $14 million to use for other purposes. So I would like to use this current bill, 3342, to put in that the proof of citizenship requirement should be a prerequisite for re-registration of all current voters for both the funding and implementation of the centralized voter registration bill. I simply do not understand why we would all be put into the same system without all providing the same data requirements. And if ever we were to be cleaning up the system, the time is now. You've heard about Washington State. You've heard about all the questions about fraud and sabotage. I just do not think that we can turn our backs on the fact that it isn't just people of an opposing party that may be wanting to misuse the system. It could be our adversaries from Al-Qaeda and the like. And I'd also like to remind you that back in the 80s, we were faced with something of this nature when the Rajneesh wanted to take over the city of Antelope. In fact, they did. And so we then put in a 21-day voter registration period, allowing the elections officials to do some verification. I would ask that we now reintroduce the urgency of doing some verification. And again, I ask you to amend House Bill 3342 to include the citizenship requirement, and then, yes, to attach that requirement to be a part of getting the funding for the centralized voter registration system with a requirement for re-registration by everyone. Thank you for listening, and I'll accept questions, but I'll turn over to Sharon.
Sharon, if you would go ahead and either add your testimony or say ditto, whatever you so choose.
My name is Sharon Cornish, P.O. Box 312, Hillsborough. I also support this bill as amended.
You support the proposed amendments.
Right. And this is part of the reason. And to verify that I'm not a racist, I'd like to give you a little background. I was raised with Mexican and Latino people. My father was a mayor, two-term, in Pico Rivera, L.A. County, California. I picked this up coming up to this meeting today. It's downstairs. It's a Mexican research. It's called Hispanic Center, a private research group. And they say that 11 million undocumented are coming into the U.S. Pick it up and read it. When I grew up, people from Mexico wanted to be a citizen, or they were farm workers with documentation. My father was a dairyman. He hired a lot of them. I'm asking for U.S. citizenship of these people to become legitimate citizens. Not only the ones from Mexico, but also Latin America. And so I'm asking you to review for yourself this article. It's very informative, and it's written by Hispanics. And therefore, I support this bill.
I'd like to add one thing.
Okay.
When I was watching the checking of the signatures during the election watch for the November election, I noticed how many blank spaces there were, and was told during that signature watch that those were people who'd registered by mail but had failed to provide HABA required proof of ID. They'd even been sent a letter, Appendix 10, from the vote by mail manual, telling them that under the requirements of HABA, they must provide proof of ID in order to vote in the federal election. These people had still disregarded that letter that you and I have had to pay for by as taxpayers. They said they were given a ballot, and that ballot was counted on election day. How many were there in Washington County? 4,400 of them. 4,400. That we have no idea who they are, why they voted, who prompted them to vote. In particular, because when you fill out that voter registration application, it also provides a mailing address. And if somebody uses a mailing address and the ballot or that voter registration acknowledgement is not returned as undeliverable, that person is considered bona fide. What further disturbs me is that the Secretary of State instructed county clerks that when a person who'd not provided the ID got to vote regardless in the election, that the notation in the system that indicated the person had not yet complied with voter registration requirements as required by HABA, that notation be immediately removed so that no one could tell whether that person had complied with voter registration requirements or not. And that is why I'm so concerned about the centralized voter registration system and the fact that we need to check who is in the system. Again, I regard this as the animal, vegetable, and mineral list. And then you think about that there were bucket loads of voter registration cards brought in where no requirement was made whatever for people to provide any form of ID. I think it's time that we required that ID and that we purged those who do not belong in the system or who vote more than once because they can take advantage of the looseness of the system. I think it's time now that we're having this centralized system, and do thank you for listening.
Ruth and Sharon, thank you, and thank you for pointing out the newspaper and where you can get that for those that didn't know. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. And Ruth, I would just submit to you that the author of the bill, Representative Krupp, is the person for whom you would need to talk to for amendments.
Thank you.
You bet.
Will do.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher, you had a comment?
Yeah, I have a comment. I agree that immigration laws need to be looked at, and that's another issue. I would like to support getting people here that are legal and helping them become so. But as far as centralized voter registration, it would, as it's presently presented to us, pick up duplicate voters, but it would miss false registrations. And an example of that is I've had many people live at my house, and I've got pieces of mail for them, and I could send that in and say, you know, and sign their voter registration card. Therefore, their signature will match because it would be me signing it. I'm not doing this. I'm just giving you an example. I've also employed these people, and I could also send in paycheck stubs on their behalf that I have on file. And the centralized voter registration would miss those if we don't re-register people. And I think that's a valid point to look at re-registering. I know it's a pain. It sounds like a pain. It would be a problem, but I think it would help bring some integrity to the whole system.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Thatcher. The remaining testimony is opposed to the bill. At this time, we're going to stand at ease for 3 minutes. Certain people on the committee need to use the restroom. Be done in about 10 minutes. At this time, I will call forward, surprise, Annette. Annette and Steve, you want to come up,
together. And for those that are remaining that are opposed to the bill, in light of time, because the committee will end at 3 o'clock, and I understand that certain people may want to get on the record in opposition, if you want to say ditto to previous testimony, it works for me.
Annette Newingham, Lane County Elections, and it's on behalf of the Association of County Clerks. Chair Kitts and members of the committee, I'll be brief because this is really pretty pretty much the same as what we had for the other testimony. Pretty much the fact is that we'd be concerned about some of the evidence of identification, how it'd be handled in voter registration drives, would we be handing them over to them for evidence and bringing them in along with the registration cards. Certainly some concerns there. And if the identification is provided to individuals conducting voter registration drives, what if they failed to deliver the documents? Would election officials be required to maintain the evidence? A lot of administrative questions that certainly we could work out. If so, would these records be considered public documents? There'd be concern of that kind of public identity coming out. The bill is unclear where evidence of identification is not postmarked or received by this 21st day prior to the election, whether it can be supplied by election day to qualify to vote. It was a little bit ambiguous in that sense. It appears that the Federal Help America Vote Act might conflict with the proposed language in this bill requiring that there be separate registration for federal election to vote in for federal as opposed to the state issues. That would probably need require some analysis by the Secretary of State's office. Section 8 states that House Bill 3342 only applies to voter registration cards designed, prepared, or distributed on or after the operative date of the amendments to ORS 247.171. Does that mean that if the registration card is an older registration card, it wouldn't apply to those? Or are we saying that for every old card that's received, they would be invalid completely and they would have to find a new card? Which these are barrier concerns that would be highly concerned about. And if all previous registration cards became invalid, wouldn't that be a risk of disenfranchising qualified voters? I'd also like to add that I am one of two counties that is in the process of being the pilot for the Oregon Centralized Voter Registration System. This May election, we are doing both on my current system, election system, and shadowing with the Oregon Centralized Voter Registration System, doing registration in both, taking care of that issue. So I am somewhat familiar with it. I'm highly impressed with the way when the registration happens, that it actually attaches to the Department of Motor Vehicles, brings up the driver's license. There is a very good process that is in place that is going to not just take care of duplicate registration, but also helps with the identity concerns that some of the audience may have.
So. Annette, thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Holby.
Just a quick one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make it very brief. Annette, thank you for your stamina and returning to this committee and voicing your opinion on behalf of the county clerks. I just have a question about, you know, we've heard all these concerns about voter registration fraud and, you know, all these things that we're trying to address through proof of identification. Do you know what percentage of voter fraud that has been identified by county clerks across the state?
I can, Chair Kitts, Representative Holby, I have not had much experience with that. We've had hardly any fraud in the years that I have worked the election since 1990. It is complaint driven. I did have a circumstance in my office where we did catch someone who had registered like 8 different cards, signing different names, and we saw the similarity. We actually caught those cards, noticed the difference, and referred them to the state, and that individual was convicted after this. I'm making a long story short, but they were found and convicted.
I'm going to interrupt for 1 second. In 14 years of being county clerk, How many instances have you come across? There's one.
That's the one I remember. I remember having a complaint that there were individuals that were registered and that were not U.S. citizens, and I followed through on that and sent a letter to them and asking for identification, and they provided me with their proof of passports that they were a U.S. citizen, and so it was not correct. Other than that, I cannot remember any.
So one case.
In 14 years. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Steve, do you have written testimony?
I do not, but I give a half ditto. First, I would like to, most honorable chair.
I only asked that because you checked that you did have written testimony.
I'm sorry. I didn't have my glasses on.
That's all right.
I failed to introduce myself in my last testimony. I am Steve Druckenmiller. I'm the Linn County Clerk. I have been conducting elections for 21 years. And to follow up on your question, Representative Holvey, I can recall a couple cases of election fraud. None of them had to do with citizenship or non-residence. It had to do with multiple voting. And I also would say that regardless of the kind of fraud that vote by mail has been pointed to with multiple registrations, multiple ballots, that you could do that same thing at poll elections. And it really isn't the kind of election, but it is the kind of fraud you could do. But I am a very dying breed of election officials because I am ultra-conservative, and there's not too many of us left. And the reason Annette and I sit together is because we really come from things at a different perspective, and they want to see where the crazy uncle is and keep me in their sight.
Are you saying that Annette is not ultra-conservative?
I would say that my dear friend Annette, and she is a dear friend, and I come from different perspectives on this. At times. That's why it's hard for me to say, but on Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
But there were some remarks made about being able to read the Constitution. For 21 years, I have taken that as closely as important to me as my family. I'm elected to do that. I have a degree in government and law. And the last session, I worked with Representative Close very closely on trying to find a way about the citizenship, because I believed in it. I have emails to her and from her where we were in agreement that it should be done. And I can tell you that in theory, it is good. In practice, it is not. And this was finally my conclusion. And so on this, I can say ditto. And I hope that maybe we can have another hearing on this at some time where we can expound a little bit longer about the elections process and why this is not a good idea.
I think that we'll probably bring it back at a later time. Annette, do you have a comment?
I just wanted to follow up on something Steve said to clarify that on multiple ballots, we would count one ballot and we would refer them to the state but not count multiple ballots.
Great. Thank you. The follow-up to that, on that multiple ballot person that you're speaking of, did you find that they were voting for the same person time and time again?
Chair Kitts, members of the committee, we would never open up the second ballot to even look at how they voted.
Oh, okay.
We would only count one ballot.
I thought maybe you were going to strenuously object. That's fine. Thank you. I appreciate you guys being here. Ed, Jesse, Steve, we're running out of time. Do you guys have written testimony? You did check that you did have written testimony? Do you wish to add anything at this time, or do you want to wait till the next time that we bring this bill forward?
Well, thinking of these things.
I don't see Jesse anyway, so. Is that all right? Great. Thank you. So at this time, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3342. Committee, we will move House Bill 2260 to the next committee meeting, if that's acceptable to the committee. Thank you. For the good of the order? Go ahead.
Oh. Yes, Mr. Chair, I move to introduce...
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, meeting's still going.
Sorry, one more thing.
Excuse me, meeting is still going. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee introduce our move LCs 3495 and 3494 as committee bills.
Representative Thatcher moves we introduce LCs 3495 and 3494 as committee bills.
Mr. Chair, I have a little bit of a problem with 3495. I think it's too broadly drafted. And I suggest you send it back to Legislative Council. The way I read it, it would apply to wheelchairs, pocket bikes, and anything else. Maybe even bicycles.
3495, is that your concern?
Yeah.
Representative March has expressed concern with 3495. I will pull that one back from the introduction process at this time. I will move that LC 3494 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any objections? Seeing none, so done. This time we'll adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Can you take up those concerns for Representative March has put them in writing and go back to the speaker and find out what she wants to do? All right.
Uh-oh. There's another group coming in.
That's not me.
Huh.
Well, maybe it's mine.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Your question was simple enough that somebody could actually have three different positions he could take.
Yeah. Well.
Maybe it's mental illness that we're looking at, right? Yeah.
Hey. John Paul. Yeah, John, how are you? How's Multnomah County doing?
Yes, we're doing fine. Someday I'd like to have a chance to sit down and talk to you about the process and how to put the waters like it really works.
Sure, I'd love to. Let's set up time and talk.
And it helps really work.
Yeah, no, I got you. Let's do that.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Hey, DA.
What's that?